to Between the Worlds. In this episode, we talk about the Ace of Wands, striking out and getting hot. A torch appears to guide your way from within the caves of night. A wand, a club, a divining rod. Your will is fire, casting shadows, singing light. Welcome back, listeners, to season two of Between the Worlds. We are so excited to have you here. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for traveling across the great expanse of our rest period and rejoining us again. We're so excited to be back with you, even though the world is definitely in an interesting place right now. There's a lot of tension, a lot of growth, and a lot of opportunity for growth, a lot of grief, a lot of struggle. There's a lot. So we're going to be bringing you the Suit of Wands this season. Not only is the wand the sexiest witch's tool, but it's also her call to power. We're hoping that the invocation of wands this season empowers us to rise up in the name of justice. As with last season, there's so much to say about the ace. And so before we sashay into the Forest of the Wands, wandering through the yew and the ash and the hazelnut trees, for this episode, I'm coming to you alone because we need to be together and concentrate. There's so much content to go over so that you can really understand the nature of the wands as we go into them. However, joining us throughout the season, we have some amazing, amazing guests lined up for you who I'm sure you're already familiar with. But what's different about this season is that, opposed to last season, all of our guests this time are going to be witches and wizards and magical folks and tarot experts. So let's get started. The wand is the tool of the South, born of the realms of fire. Because in the Northern Hemisphere, the South is the direction of the equator, which is where the sun burns the brightest and hottest and rises the highest. So when we call in the guardians of the South, we call in the power of blood and volcanoes and starlight and solar flares and electricity, molten lava, lightning, static. It's all life force energy, this heat, this power. And when we call in our animal familiars of the suit of wands, we call in salamanders who dance in fire. We call in scorpions and dragons and phoenixes born from their own ashes. We place bloodstone and volcanic rock on our altars. You might use obsidian or carnelian or fire opals and tiger's eye. And when we touch these stones, formed in the fiery blood of the earth, we can savor their smoke, sense the iron and the metals inside, which bring us the courage of lions. The holiday of the South, as you might be aware, is summer solstice, the children's holiday, which is coming up in just a few days. You might be excited to hear. A time for celebration and joy. The summer solstice is also called the Gate of Life, because that's when the sun reaches its peak in the sky and then begins its descent back towards the world for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere. The summer solstice is a good time, I wanted to tell you, to gather your herbs. These are things that you can do on the summer solstice. These are some wand-like activities. So it's a good time to gather your herbs because they're said to contain the full power of the sun when you harvest them on that day. It's also a good time to consecrate your wands, to clear them and bless them and pass them through fire and smoke. And you can blow your intentions into them. So you might say, this wand will call me to my greatest power, or will manifest my dreams for a just world. You can also drink dandelion tea and say a prayer to the spirit of fire to give your thanks to the sun on the summer solstice. The suit of wands is the suit of the sun. You see, wands are the conduits of holy fire, which bring us courage and strength. The spirit of wands ignites our will and our passions. And of course, we need more wands in the world right now, because witches with a hunger for justice are directing their wands at the base of the tower of what bell hooks might call white supremacist capitalist patriarchy, and are calling for that tower to burn to the ground. Black abolitionists, witches, and freedom fighters are leading us in this call to action, and for that we thank them and follow their lead, because we want to use wand energy to do something. And that's what it's made for. It's our call to action. In fact, it's that want, that desire, that energy of passion, which initiates our will to do anything at all. So whenever we feel that desire, we're feeling wand energy. We're feeling the spirit of the wand when we want, when we hunger. When we feel anger, we also feel the spirit of the wand. We feel the spirit of the wand in any of our passions. So when you want to make something happen, it's the wand force that launches you on your journey to do it. And it's that wand force, that initiating energy that you need to get a hold of. Small example. I've been thinking about taking voice lessons for a long time. I will occasionally get some shiz over my Californian accent, but really the reason I want to get voice lessons is because I really want to be able to sing. To me, singing is the ultimate expression of the wand spirit, because when you sing, your conduit, your channel for your voice, for music, you're letting the spirit of the world sing through you. But a lot of us, myself included, think about things we'd like to do, and we dabble, or we contemplate them, but our desires kind of just hang out around the corners of the room, kind of like wallflowers at the prom. But we can think of the spirit of wands as that hot kid that invites our wallflowers to dance. That hot kid that gets us to dance like greased lightning. That handsome wand spirit pulls us close and turns us on and pulls off the glasses of our sexy librarian. Even though I like glasses, since I'm sure do you. But still, if you want to get the effect of wands, think of Michelle Pfeiffer turning from the lonely librarian cat lady into the leather-clad librarian cat woman.
I don't know about you, Miss Kitty, but I feel so much yummier.
As you know, magic is the practice of transforming reality according to our will. So the wand is often thought of as the witch's most powerful magical tool, because a wand is a conduit for our will to be made manifest in the world around us. The wand is a conduit. Will is the essence of the wand. So will is our desire. Will is our ability to bring things into being. So it would be my will that would get me to actually practice singing every day enough to make it so that I could actually do it with the greatness that my Leo moon demands. So as we go through this season, dear witches out there, consider what you will to bring into the world and how your will can be of service to the world around you. As we discuss each card, you can consider where you are in your journey to make your will happen. So that's like a little touchstone that you can come back to throughout the season.
What do you want to do? You want to give it to and know that you will make it grow, give it life, burn and burn away distractions, hold your hand out, call upon the face of.
So let's have a look at the card, shall we? Looking at the Rider-Waite-Coleman-Smith version of the deck, you see a hand, a a godly, magical hand, radiant with light, appearing from a cloud of smoke or fog. This magical hand holds what appears to be a very verdant, leafy, reddish-brown dildo. Just kidding. It's holding a big wooden wand with leaves sprouting from its smooth, throbbing staff. No, but seriously, folks, what we have here is a super phallic-looking wand, and that's no accident. The suit of wands speaks to virility, life force energy, eros, pleasure, exuberance, activity, and this sexy spark that says, yes, go, go for it, and we are here for it. Getting a little more graphic / specific here, since we are sex positive witches after all, when you think of an engorged phallus or cock or clitoris, you know, their blood is up. They're ready for action and for pleasure. We might also consider what happens when we are super turned on. At that point, we're driven, we're energized, we are ready, but we might also not be making the most considered decisions. There's a rashness to the Ace of Wands, a kind of embrace first, ask questions later kind of energy that we should maybe take into consideration. In the Ace of Wands, the Angel of the South thrusts the flowering wand into the air over a bucolic landscape. And there's a river running through the land. This is a lush place. It looks like the Loire Valley or something, someplace romantic and green. And there's this castle in the distance, and it all feels full of magic and possibility and abundance. And we're there in this abundant land, receiving a visitation from the guardian of fire, the watchtower of the south, the guardians of passion, guardian of will, sometimes known as the Archangel Michael or Michael, who presents us with our wand. Do you guys know that tarot church, Builders of the Adytum? That tarot church sings Michael's name like this. So you can call him in with that little song. Initially and historically, the Archangel Michael was first known as a healer, then as a protector, then as a warrior. He appears in all the Abrahamic religions, usually trampling on a demon with his sword raised up to smite the demon's horned face. In angelic magic, you often call on Michael for protection. But I also see him as a corollary to all fire deities in many different traditions throughout the world. Like, for instance, Brigid, the goddess of fire and fertility for the Celts of Britain. Or in the Yoruban pantheon, for instance, it might be Ogun, god of fire and warfare, or Oya, the goddess of fire and fertility. In the Zoroastrian religion, a religion of poetry and fire, and one of the world's oldest continuously practiced religions, which began in what is now known as Iran, the Magi, the priests of the tradition, carried bundles of sticks, also in their language called slender wands, which they used to seek holiness, to connect the material world to the spiritual realms. The deities would send their blessing down through the wands, and the Magi would send their offerings back up to the deities the same way, back through their wands. When the Greeks referred to magia, or magic, what they were referring to were the practices of these Zoroastrian priests of Persia. The Zoroastrians also used a mace, which is another wand-like thing, which is kind of a weapon that is usually made of wood with a metal head made of stone or bone or copper or bronze. But for the Magi, it was used as a spiritual weapon to drive off evil. And you might recognize the head of the mace in the hand of the emperor. It's that round thing with the cross on it in the Rider-Waite-Cohen-Smith deck. So as you can see, there is totally something martial about the wands. Wands have an aggressive, vanquishing, victorious spirit. And as I said, it's often the fire deities that we would call upon for protection. So they are the ones that correlate with the wands, because they're the ones that are said to help you vanquish your foes and purify you and give you that spark of life. Like Prometheus, the Greek Titan, who created humans out of clay and stole fire from the gods and brought it to humans for them to use and create with. But why is fire so helpful? Let's think about what fire is. Let's think about what it does. Fire illuminates. It brings light. It brings life. It makes life possible in the cold. It makes life possible in general, because fire is heat, and heat is electricity and spark. It's energy. Fire awakens, enlivens. Whether it's from the sun or from the volcanic vents at the bottom of the ocean, heat and warmth brings life. Fire is also associated, as we've discussed, with sexuality and passion, and even war, because it's the energy of power which can be used to help or to harm. So as I said before, all of these energies are neutral. You know, the energy of anger, the energy of fire, the energy of passion, all of that is neutral. It's really how you use it that determines whether or not we consider it negative or positive. But let's talk more about wands specifically. And again, you want to keep all of this in mind throughout the season, because it'll really be helpful for you when you give readings, when you make your magic, and also, hopefully, in your life. A wand is a conduit. It directs energy. Wands are like lightning rods. They grab electricity from the ethers and ground it into the earth. We might imagine like a weather vane out on the top of a barn somewhere, just collecting the lightning. Or like the Washington Monument, when Goddess let us know how displeased she was with the current administration. So traditionally, wands are made of wood, and wood comes from trees. So if we think about what trees do, we'll observe that like wands, they unite the heavenly and the earthly realms. Trees reach deep into the earth and draw up water and nutrients and minerals, and their branches reach into the heavens, and their leaves catch the light and transmute the light into usable sugars through the process of photosynthesis. Both the tree and the wand that comes from it are vehicles of transmutation. And for them to be most effective, they need to be grounded in and fortified by the earth itself, and also enlivened by the light of our star, the sun, in our heavenly realms. So when we use our wands, we are literally doing the same thing that trees are doing. We're drawing from our resources, and we're drawing from our influences and our inspiration. Remembering, our ideas and our power don't just come from nowhere. They come from the earth. They come from the sun. They come from nature. They come from the people in our communities who are influencing us. So even though there is kind of this sort of like individualist pioneer kind of fire sign sense to the wands, it is very much in relation to community, and it is very much in relation to earth, because all of that energy and power comes from those sources. In magical lore, the type of tree that a wand came from would flavor the energy that comes through it. So for instance, you might use a hawthorn wand for protection magic, or oak for strength, for instance, or maple for some delicious abundance. So just as the kind of wood you use for your wand influences the way the wand performs, that's also true of the person who wields the wand, because essentially a wand is an extension of the person. So the way that the person operates energetically filters the spirit running through the wand, kind of like a prism. Your nature influences the way you use your power in the world. In different decks, wands are referred to by many different names. Sometimes they're called clubs or staffs or rods. You might have seen this on different decks. You might remember from ancient Greece that one type of wand, perhaps our favorite wand, I certainly love this wand, is the caduceus, the wand of Mercury. You might recall with the coiling snakes rising up around it and two wings at the top. And of course, Mercury is a messenger god and a psychopomp, which means a traveler between the realms of the gods and the realms of the dead. Mercury is also a trickster, a liar, a thief, a merchant, unsurprisingly, in relation to those things, and a healer. So Mercury uses his staff, his caduceus, his wand, to put people to sleep and to wake them up again, or to bring a gentle death and to bring people to life again. So we can imagine our wands also as tools of rest, regeneration, and healing. The staff of Mercury is often confused with the rod of Asclepius, who is the god of healing, and his daughter, Hygieia, who is actually a much older goddess than her quote-unquote father. She's always associated with the snake. You always see her depicted with a snake, which is often, almost always, a symbol of regeneration, healing, and goddess cultures. So the staff you see in doctor's offices today is the rod of Asclepius, and I also like to think of it as the rod of Hygieia. But unlike the caduceus, it only has one snake and no wings, even though they both get confused a lot. Another version of the wand is the staff or the cane. In the major arcana of the tarot, you'll remember, do y'all remember who carries the staff? I know you do. It's the hermit. The hermit, as you know, is the old one, the wise one. The hermit is the elder. The hermit is the crone. In China, a jade staff called a Jui was a symbol of reverence and was presented to respected elders in the community. So we can see that the cane or the walking stick often signifies authority that comes through age and experience. But in particular, we want to think about this idea of authority and how the wand confers that quality. We might also consider the shepherd's crook. Shepherd, of course, being a leader or a guide. So when the wands appear, we know that they're speaking to authority and leadership, perhaps your own, if it's coming up in your reading. In this card particular, in the Ace of Wands, we see that spark of leadership, that first leap out into the journey to feel your full power. And as we'd mentioned before, another important wand symbol is the scepter, which is essentially a baton that we see many, many, many kings and emperors and royals throughout the world carrying. Whoever holds the scepter holds the authority. In the medieval history of the tarot, authorities tend to be kings or emperors. But having the anarchist, anti-hierarchical tendencies that I do, and that I'm sure you do, I prefer to think of the scepter more like a talking stick in the fashion of the Wampanoag, First Nations people of Northeastern Americas. Because as I understand it, in that culture, whoever holds the talking stick has the authority to speak, but the stick is passed around so that everyone's voice can be heard. So we might think of wands as authority or power, but that power is passed around and shared. Another form of wand, of course, is a torch, a wand with a fire at the tip. And today we might call that a flashlight. But as you know, torches lead us out of the labyrinthine caves. They lead us through the moonlit woods. They help us find our path when we're lost. So if you're lost, look to the wands. When we raise a torch, we're hailing others. We're hailing others to follow our lead, and we're acting as a guide. And similarly, we can look for the torchlight of other people who inspire us, and they can help lead us out of the shadowy moors of lostness or grief or confusion. For witches, it's the goddess Hecate that wields the torch. She's the one who leads us through the three worlds because she knows which direction to go. And she always encourages us to take the path that leads to our truest, most authentic self. And the wands are doing that too. They're helping lead us to our truest, most authentic self. The reason I'm bringing up all these different kinds of wands is so that you can really get a sense of what a wand is doing and how it's functioning. We might also consider the wand as a dousing rod. Do you know what I'm talking about? They're sticks with a forked end, and they're most popularly used in medieval Europe to detect like things like hidden metals, water, minerals, bones, all sorts of magical things. People still use them today. Some people call this rod a divining rod, but I guess the people who do this, dowsing, don't really like that because they don't think of it as supernatural, but I do. I think that a divining rod implies a kind of force, a life force flowing through the wood, showing the wielder where the water is, or where the treasure is, or where the buried bones are of our ancestors. For healers, and for some witches like myself, our power flows through our hands. Our fingers act as wands. I often just use my finger instead of a full wand because it's just really handy. But my friend Melanie, in fact, just got a wand tattooed down her arm and onto her pointer finger, and it feels very powerful to me. A wand is essentially a pointed finger. It's directing energy and attention. So think about the fairies in Sleeping Beauty. When they're changing Aurora's dress from pink to blue, they're saying, that dress that Aurora is wearing, that's what we're focusing on. Not the carpet, not the dishes, the dress. And we're transforming it here and now. We're making it pink.
Oh, no, not pink.
No, we're making it blue.
Make it blue.
And we're making it pink.
Make it pink.
You might also remember that the stage magician uses his wand or her wand to distract our attention away from the place the trick is happening. But in general, a witch uses her wand to point to that thing that she wants to transform. So when you get the Ace of Wands in the reading, it's saying it's pointing to something. It's pointing to something that needs transformation. It's pointing to some place that you need to direct your will, or that spirit is calling you to direct your will. Last thing about the hands. When a healer directs healing energy through their hands, hopefully the energy is coming from the earth or the sun and not their own internal resources, because that is a very good way to burn out as a healer if you're just drawing from your own force, life force. But they're directing the healing energy through their hands and down into the body of whomever they wish to heal and transform, to bring energy and awareness and to bring that life-giving heat and transformation. Something that's often said in the healing community, where attention goes, energy flows. That may as well really be the wand mantra. Wherever you direct your attention is where the transformation is going to happen, and where your energy is going to be. So you can create a lot of transformation by shifting where you're focusing your energy. There is some question as to whether the power that travels through the wand comes from the witch herself, the holder of the wand, or from some unseen realm. The wand itself is a conduit. The energy flows through the wand and is directed by its wielder, but it's not generated by the wand itself. It's not the wand that is the powerful thing. The wand is a pathway for the powers to move. So again, when wands come up in a reading, you know you're being called to direct your power, focus your energy and attention, but also to consider where your power is coming from. So you're considering, you know, if I'm acting as a wand, if I'm acting as a conduit, where is my power coming from? Where is my resource coming from? And also consider who you would like that energy, or whom you would like that energy to serve, because you're directing it outward. And one would hope that it's not just for individualistic aims, but for the good of all beings. In the Odyssey, Homer wrote that Athena used her magic wand to make Odysseus old, to disguise him. And then she used it to make him young again. And of course, Circe, the witch on the island who knew all about the herbs, used her magic wand to turn men into pigs and other animals, other very cute animals. In folk legends, in fairy tales, fairies are the ones who wield the wands. And so there's this whole motif in Western literature of the evil female witch who uses a magic wand to maliciously transform her victims. When the witches of the world get a hold of the wands, the patriarchy is in trouble. as I say in my book, Initiated, Memoir of a Witch, available wherever fine books are sold. Please grab a copy now in Italian, Czech, French, Russian, Polish, and Chinese. When all the witches of the world reach their flowering wands, the patriarchal order will fall. Okay, a few more bits of nitty-gritty on the card itself. Some numerology, some astrology. So the Ace of Wands and all the wands are associated with the fire signs. So Aries, which is bringing to the wands the energy of initiative or initiating energy. It's a pioneering spirit. It begins things. It's also the energy of leadership and conflict. It's the martial warrior spirit. And then, of course, Leo, which calls into the wands the joy of life, creativity, courage, magnetism, ambition, pleasure, the theatrical, the sports of life, joyful things. And then, of course, Sagittarius, which is all about growth and expansion and seeking truth and knowledge and healing. It's optimistic and expansive. So if the Ace of Wands comes up in a reading, I wanted to just clue you in on a few things that you might really, like on a literal level, be thinking about. As I said before, if it comes up in a reading, wands are going to be asking you to focus your energy from light bulb style to laser style. So kind of narrowing your focus. They're also going to be asking you to celebrate. They're going to be asking you to celebrate life and self and rebirth. And they're going to, especially the Ace of Wands, is going to indicate an awakening. Something is coming to life for you if you get the Ace of Wands in a reading. If you remember nothing else about this card, just remember that the Ace of Wands represents a beginning. It's a first step. Something is igniting. Something important is coming into being. But you have to blow on it. You have to tend to it. You have to feed it to keep it alive and to make it grow. Because think of the Ace of Wands as like a match struck. It blazes into fire. But that goes out quickly. That spark goes out quickly unless you feed it, unless you feed it with your resource. So your resource is going to be all the things that nourish and sustain you and that you have to use to then sustain that flame. Ace of Wands can also indicate, of course, a very hot, a very passionate new relationship or sexual encounter, but potentially an unstable one. It could also include a project, one that includes a lot of risk because the wands are, the wand spirit's willing to take risk. It's willing to put itself out there. So you might be going into a business for yourself, for example, or taking on a new challenge in your work. But chances are you're passionate about the project, and that is that passion that will see you through if you nourish it. It's also a great opportunity to grow because, that Sagittarian aspect, the Ace of Wands is asking you to open your mind and to travel. And I don't just mean travel, literally like hop on a train, but you can travel through reading, you can travel through going to new places in your city. You can travel through anything that expands your mind, expands your experience of the world. Again, this is for the Ace. And in general, the Ace is saying, get ready for excitement. Something has lit up. The torch has been lit and passed to you. And now it's your turn to run. It's like you're in the Olympics. Like you got handed that torch and now you need to run with it. I mean, chances are high, you should say yes. The story of the wands, the whole suit of wands, is how you take that first spark from that first sprouting branch and turn it into a whole forest. And so when you get the Ace, the potential is there. It's all there. That spark is there. But now you need to flesh it out. And in the rest of the reading, you're going to look for what other parts of the wand story come up that you might need to look out for. So for instance, if you get the Five of Wands also in your reading, you might need to focus on healthy collaboration. Like that might be something that you need to do in order to take that spark of the Ace of Wands and make it, find a home, make it grow into that forest. Or let's say you get the Nine of Wands in addition to the Ace in your reading. Well, that would be recognizing and utilizing the lessons that you've already learned, right? So recognizing how far you've come and that you already have a lot of the information you need in order to bring this project to completion, to see it through. Wands energy, as I said, tends to be aggressive and combative. So that also might be coming up, specifically if it's in reverse. But if you channel it in a healthy way, you can use it to create massive transformation in your life. So be on guard against anger that is channeled into things that are destructive for you. But anger can also be healthy. For instance, like if it's in response to racism or police brutality, for instance, in this country, we can use the energy that comes from anger and harness it to create transformation and justice. And if we didn't feel angry, we probably wouldn't do that. Those emotions are important. We shouldn't just seek to get rid of them because they're here for a reason. Continuing on with this idea of reversals a little bit here. With the aces, upwards always means yes, and reversed means no, just to put it simply. So even though you might be ready and aching for change, if you get the Ace of Wands in reverse, now might not be the time. There might be something holding you back, or the project might need a little more oxygen, a little more energy, a little more will, a little more research. And the problem might be that if you shoot your firework now, it could turn into a dud. Like it might go up, but just not explode. So you might just need to add a little bit more baking time, a little more heat. Again, the Ace of Wands reversed warns against hot-headedness, impetuousness, throwing yourself into something, but then not having the energy to sustain it. That's why you really do have to consider your resources as you're going into this new passionate wands experience. Finally, reaching the end of our first episode, I wanted to give you some ideas about what you could do if you do want to call this energy in, to call in the energy and the spirit of the Ace of Wands. So one thing I love to do, I can't remember, I've talked to you about this before, but purifying your house with fire. So you can take a candle, or sometimes I like to pour like high proof rum into Epsom salts in a fireproof container and walk through my house and ask the fire to cleanse the space. Just walking through, you don't need to light anything on fire, please don't. Candle magic also is a very simple and easy and effective way to harness the power of fire. You're just going to carve your intention into the candle and burn it down in your presence. If you are leaving the house, pinch it out and then light it back up when you come back. However, I usually, when I'm using candle spells, just tend to use small candles and have it all burn down at once so I can just really see it happen. You can also point your wand at the object you wish to transform. So if you're doing a spell, you can draw circles around an object that symbolizes what you're wanting to work with. You can also, another form of wands, which we're going to be talking about so much and I'm so excited to talk to you about, is, you know, like I said, wands are trees, wands are flowers. Wands represent the flowering realms and the realms of the trees and the branches and the bushes. So you can brush yourself off with branches or flowers. Think about it. A wand is a broom, right? Brooms are made of essentially plants. They're clearing objects as well. So you can take your wand and dip it into water and paint with it, or dip it into a substance and draw with it. You can also, if you want to call in the spirit of wands, use herbs, fiery herbs like cinnamon or pepper or onion or mustard, you know, things with spice and heat. You might want to add that to your spells or add it to your cooking if you're a kitchen witch. I like to, when I'm doing a spell, like if I'm doing like a talisman or an amulet, then you might pass that magical item through the fire to awaken and enliven and inspirit your spell objects. You can also make your own wand and consider when you're doing that what you're making your wand for, what kind of wood or stone you might want to use. You can write the names of your deities or your spirits on the wand, spirits of the north and the south and the east and the west, or if you work with Bridget or Odin or your manja or whoever you work with. According to the Key of Solomon, when you're making a wand, the staff should be of elderwood or cane, and the wand of hazel or nut tree. And in all cases, the wood should be virgin, that is only 1 year's growth, and they should be cut from the tree at a single stroke on the day of Mercury, otherwise known as Wednesday, at sunrise. Any writing that you do on it should be engraved also on the day and hour of Mercury. So it sounds easy, right? I don't think we have to get that fussy about it, but you can if you want, if you're a ceremonial magician. Anyway, whew. So we made it. We made it to the end of the Ace of Wands. That was a lot of information. I hope you're able to retain all of that. We're going to be having a workshop on wands at the end of the season. So we hope you can join us for that. But if you sign up now, you're also going to get monthly little mini workshops leading up to that. And it's only $21 for a month to sign up. And then you get all these major workshops. I mean, it is a super deal. It's an amazing deal. So check out our website about that. And tune in next week when we will be clarifying one of the more confusing cards in the deck, I think so at least, the Two of Wands, with seriously one of my favorite witches in the world, Pam Grossman of the Witch Wave podcast. We have such a great conversation. I cannot wait for you to hear it. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We love you. We're so glad to be back with you. We missed you so much. We just love hearing from you, and it was so fun to connect with you on Instagram and on Facebook over our holiday. But don't forget, if you like this episode, please do share it with me on Instagram. I love to hear from all of you guys. You can tag me at Oracle Valet. I love to hear your thoughts on wands and all the witchy things. And if you get a sec, please do rate us and review us on iTunes. We love to keep this podcast free, and it makes a huge difference in keeping our show on the air when you rate us. And then also, if you join our coven, then you get lots of workshops. So please do join us next week. We can't wait to connect with you. And in the meantime, we'll see you between the worlds.
Between the Worlds is hosted by Amanda Yates Garcia and produced by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs, with editing help from Jiha Lee. Our podcast icon is created by Maria Minnis, aka Tiny Parsnip, links in the show notes, and our font is created by Leah Hayes.